Hi, my name is Ruth Zeman, and you're listening to Bible Studies. That's Bible Studies without BS. Today, I want to talk about how to study the Bible, or in our case, how to have an Bible study. Because it's not as common sense as I thought. I've been to a lot of Bible studies. There are some very specific details, such as there's always food. And if you're going to a Bible study without food, you're not going to a proper Bible study. So go grab yourself some snacks. Let's do this. The first thing I want you to know is use your brain. I know. That seems like an obvious thing. Why would I have to tell you to use your brain? I mean, God gave you a brain. Let's use it. But here's the thing. And I know you're going to get this. A lot of people walk into a church and turn their brains off. And they hear things and they don't put two and two together. I get so frustrated. And I know you do too. A lot of you get really frustrated because we say things like love one another. And then we have these like year-long debates on whether or not we should allow certain people in the church to be leaders and to do things. And it's not loving. It's not loving at all. In fact, if you were just to evaluate based on the verse, love one another, our score would be really low. If we got grades on this, most of us are flunking. And I think part of that is we're just not using our brain. We hear these things, and instead of filtering it through a normal brain, we filter it through religion. And religion is, well, let's define it. If you religiously go to the gym, it means you go to the gym all the time. It means the gym is your place of worship. And worship, what the thing you're worshiping at the gym, is your body or the ideal body. And frankly, there's nothing wrong with that. You haven't made it an idol necessarily. It's this ongoing, continuous practice. And this practice follows a set of rules, and it involves worship. And that's what religion is, a set of ongoing rules with worship. Now, I'm not saying that we should all go to the gym religiously. Like, seriously, I would never say that. If you ever hear me say that, I'm like crying out for help, and I've been abducted by someone. Yeah, me and the gym, I did have a gym membership, but to be clear, I got it just because they were massage chairs and you can use the massage chair every time you go. So I would go sit on the bike long enough not to look retarded to go sign up for the massage chairs. Oh, and I'm not supposed to use the word retarded. So, oops, my apologies. So anyway, going to church religiously, using our Bible religiously, having Bible studies religiously, you'll find that a lot of the practices you find at church, people want you to do them all the time, and that you have to do them all the time because that makes you a good Christian. Well, we'll get back to this one, so put a little flag here because this is an area we need to start using our brains more. But rule number one when doing an Bible study, please turn on your brain. Make sure you're plugged in. This is also why I suggest the snacks, because sometimes your brain needs a little food. Okay, we're going to be thinking, and we're going to be putting two and two together. I know that frequently when we're with certain people, we get relaxed, and we just let the words flow over us, and that's awesome, and I appreciate that you're relaxed and worshipful at church, but quit turning your brains off. Really use them and start writing down your questions, because if you don't ask your questions, you're not going to get any answers ever. So the second part of an Bible study would be, if you have a question, write it down. And I really do mean it, write it down. My husband doesn't write anything down. I love him to pieces. He drives me insane. And I love that little card that says, marriage is just tying yourself to one person you can drive insane for the rest of your life. Yeah, we're there. Totally. I love the quote by, I think it's Mary Kay Ash. I think Ash is there. Anyway, the pink lady. She said, and I'm going to butcher this, but here we go. The faintest ink is better. It's something about forgetting, and I'm literally forgetting it, so that's hilarious. The point is, you're more likely to remember it if you write it down. Even the act of writing it down is doing something and thus cements it into your memory. So that's cool. But write down your questions. And honestly, send them to me. I'd love to start helping you answer those too. Okay, step 3, pray. This one should be obvious if you have your brain turned on. If you're going to talk about God, or you're going to be with God, or you're going to ask God questions, it makes sense to ask God, not just his book, not just people who study him. It makes way more sense to go to the source. So in that spirit, let's pray. Dear Lord, thank you for this cool podcast that I get to do. It's totally awesome. Please open our hearts and our minds that we're going to really hear things and let our brains be turned on and help us make good questions. And thank you for answering us. Amen. And yes, I do believe that God really answers us, but we'll get to that one too. Okay, so we've turned our brains on, we're writing it down, we're asking questions, and we've invited God into the situation, and we're like making sure he's here. What are some other things we need to know? Well, let's talk about the Bible a little bit. It's this book that's lasted a really long time. We know that it's written by multiple authors. We know that it's written over centuries of time, that it includes some weird stuff, and it's not G-rated. Oh, it is not G-rated. And frankly, it's filled with a lot of people that you like and a lot of people who are serious assholes. Not everything you read in there is something that we should be doing or repeating. Lot's daughters got Lot drunk and then essentially raped their dad because they were afraid the apocalypse was upon them and that there were going to be no people and that it was their duty to get pregnant. I'm telling you now, this is not behavior that should ever be condoned. In fact, if I was watching it on HBO, I would be laughing and like cringing all at the same time. And I'd like to think that HBO could be sophisticated enough to do a Bible thing and get it right. But more on that later. Okay, so we've established that the Bible has lots of authors. It was also put in the order that it's in because some men decided that's the order to put it in. And so there's Bibles that aren't in it. And the books that are in it are called the canonized books. Or something like that. Again, not a Bible scholar here. But what I do know is that when people tell me, oh my gosh, so I read this thing and it's not really in the Bible, but it's in the books that weren't included, that's like a red flag moment for me. So let's not go there. I like to stick with the Bible. And, oh, here's another tip. When we study the Bible, if you can find it in the Bible, it should be able to be proved in the Bible. So you use the Bible to prove the Bible. I don't need to use other texts to prove the Bible. When you're writing a report for college, you want to have like 3 or 4 separate texts. If you want to, think of each book of the Bible as a separate text. So you can use Mark to prove John, or you can use Romans to prove something that Joel said. But we're going to stick with the Bible proves the Bible. That also means if you can only find it in one place, you might be interpreting it wrong because that's not there. So we want to be careful because when God said something and it was important, he repeats himself. This is awesome. It means we can find his word consistently over and over again because, like he says, he's the same yesterday, today, and forever. So his word is consistent. And the point is, he wants to introduce himself and he wants us to get to know him. So it's all there, which brings us to some other points. Okay, the Old Testament has a lot of genealogy. The New Testament has a lot of Jesus. There are covenants. We need to know our covenants because knowing what time and place and covenant is very important. When you're reading the Bible, you can't just say, oh, this verse is for me. So, for example, in funerals, we use the passage where Job is totally pissed off with God. And he's essentially being a big brat. And he says, essentially, that God is punking him. And it's where we get those, I come from dust and dust to dust and I can be returned. And mothers say, I brought you into this world and I can take you out. And that's what Job is saying here. He's having a frickin' hissy fit. And he's saying, fine, you brought me in from dirt. Take me back to dirt because you can because you're God. But that's kind of really assholey. And that's not something that we should be honoring and repeating. And yet, it has worked its way into the dialogue of almost every funeral. How crazy is that? And this is a perfect example of people not really putting their thinking caps on and being like, okay, situationally, what's going on here? What are we reading? Which brings me to a lot of Bible studies and why I think they're full of BS. A lot of Bible studies, they start with this great idea. Oh my gosh, let's teach people to... And I'm saying people, but come on. Let's teach a whole bunch of women that are going to study this at church, this thing. And usually they pick out what they want to teach us, and then they cherry pick verses that have the words that they want. But that's not even helpful. It's pretty much completely useless. When you do this kind of Bible study, all you've done is you've got given yourself a whole bunch of great advice with some verses out of context. But here's the thing. The Bible reveals who God is, reveals His will, and reveals the covenants that we live under. And there's gold there. It's amazing. And when you start seeing it, it's exciting. When you cherry pick verses to tell me how to behave, you've turned Jesus into someone who died on the cross so that I have to modify my behavior. Why would anyone do that? That's retarded. Oh, that word I said I was going to not use. Okay. Why in the world would someone give their life just so someone would change? That's weird. Let's really think about that. Would you die for your spouse so that your spouse would stop a bad habit? Because that sounds dumb, really dumb. But dying to save someone's life or dying because you love them, that makes a little more sense. It's still crazy to die for someone. I mean, let's just establish that right away. This is bonkers. But the covenants are bonkers. And if you don't understand what the covenants are, then you really can't read the Bible and see the magic that's there. So, let's talk about that. Oh, a side note. Use Google. It is so much easier than having to memorize where everything in the Bible is. Google has indexed everything. If you have a question and you want a biblical answer, just tag on the word verse or Bible, and you will get exactly where in the Bible that verse was. And it'll even tell you what translation. So sometimes I'll remember a verse, and I won't remember that it was NIV. And because I've been reading my Bible in the Message or in ESV, I can't find it. So I'll go look at Google and Google will just remind me, oh yeah, it's the verse you thought it was in NIV instead. Which brings us, I know, I'm going to chase rabbits this whole time, but did you know that each translation has a lot of merit, but they're not like 100%? So when you're really studying the Bible and you're really having a lot of questions in one place, go back to the original language and retranslate it today, because we did miss things. The King James people, when they translated it, they were doing it based on what the king needed and how they felt about women at the time, and all of that added flavor to it. And then when the NIV came into being, they were translating from a translation and they added all their cultural garbage to it. And then the Message is really super unique in that it was translated from the original, but they tried to modernize it. So it feels like slang sometimes. And so you get a lot of scholars who want to discredit it because it's too casual, but it's not. It's actually even better translation. But if you don't understand the covenants, you don't understand why. Okay, what are the covenants? So, let's see if I can do these in order. First is Abraham. God makes a promise with Abraham. You remember this. Stars in the sky, you're going to be a father. And then there's all these dead animals and they're cut in half. And God puts Abraham asleep. And this is cool. It means that Abraham didn't have to do anything to get all the benefits of the covenant. Now, I don't need to go over the details for you, but essentially God promises Abraham a whole bunch of stuff, and it's amazing and it's awesome. And then God says, and I'm going to sign on the bottom line, and you're not going to be held liable for it. So I've sold real estate and licensed in 2 states. And when you go through the process of buying a house, you have to sign until your hand cramps. I mean, I really think it's like an important part of the process. You sign papers and you sign papers and you sign papers. And if you get a mortgage, you get to triple the amount of paperwork. Imagine for a moment you go to buy a house and you go in there and the realtors step out for a minute to talk and you get really drowsy and you fall asleep, and then they come back and you wake up and you're like, oh, I fell asleep, I'm sorry. And you find out that somebody else just signed it. Somebody else gave you a house and you're not on the hook for anything. It's just yours. That'd be crazy, right? That's totally what just happened here. God just promised a whole bunch of things bigger than a house, signed it, and Abraham doesn't have to do anything at all. It's all his. It's God's fault. So if you were to go if the mortgage was not to get paid or any of those things, if the house was going to be assumed by anyone, it would be God's fault. You'd get all the benefits and none of the detractions. So this is a cool covenant. This is the covenant that the Hebrew people lived under. They got all the benefits of this. When Moses came about, they were living under this covenant. And this is a very graceful, merciful covenant, because it says, I'm going to bless you, and there's no behavior attached to it. There's no only if you obey. Nope, that's Moses's covenant. So the Israelites are rescued and they say, you know, God gives us all this stuff, but we're not on the hook for it. But we're slaves and we don't understand how that works. So we would like to work for this. Can you just lay out the rules for us so that we can understand how to behave? And God, being a good, merciful God, understanding that men are stupid, said, sure, I'll give you some rules. This is what it takes to be holy and righteous. So Moses was given the Ten Commandments. This is the Mosaic Covenant. There's a promise here. The promise here is if you can obey all of these covenants, and to be clear, it's not just the stuff in Exodus 20, it's a lot of stuff. If you can obey them and obey them perfectly all the way in the depths of your heart and in your mind, then you can be righteous and holy and you can be perfect enough to be in my presence. Well, if you've been around for longer than about 10 or 15 minutes, you discovered that pretty much every human on the face of this planet, by the time they've hit probably 3 or 4 years old, they've broken at least 2 or 3 of these. I'm pretty sure my son broke it by the time he was 18 months. His first word, and I'm going to embarrass him horribly here, was penis. He was so fascinated with his body, and we were trying to teach him how to name things that, frankly, it's our own fault, but there you have it. My son proceeded to use this word everywhere, causing multiple people to break out in snorting laughter. And he would lie. And I think it's a rite of passage. I've worked with 2 and 3-year-olds. Those kids love lying. I worked with 4-year-olds, and their lies are even better because by the time they're 4, they know about unicorns and aliens. And I had this one kid who went into the bathroom and he washed his hands for like 10 minutes. And when I asked him why, he said, because the aliens were in there and you could see them in the mirror. Now, a part of me thinks that's the start of an incredibly fascinating story, and the other part of me knows that this kid was just pulling my leg. We all sin, and we get the verse to prove it. For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Okay. So God gave us the Mosaic Covenant, and nobody could do it except Jesus. And he did it to fulfill the law. Which brings us to the third covenant. This is Jesus's covenant, the covenant of the cross, what we call living under grace today. God removed the rules as the criteria for us to be close to God. And he created a covenant, not just with Abraham this time, but with all of Abraham's descendants. And he made it possible for people who were not just Hebrew, not just Jewish, to join into this covenant through belief. And when you join in belief, you get all these things. And you're not the one responsible for providing them. So I heard this great TED Talk the other day, and it was about liberties and rights. And as Americans, we have these inalienable rights, but who's responsible for making sure that you get them? The government is. So the government is saying that human dignity is the responsibility of the government to uphold. And we have all these laws because this is how we've defined giving each other human dignity and not squashing each other's toes in the pursuit of happiness. And we get plenty of them from the Bible, but we have things like you can't murder each other because it's a question of human dignity and rights as much as it is that we don't want to have lawlessness and free-for-all. Because if I go around and do whatever I want, eventually I will hurt the dignity of others. Not because I mean to be a jerk about it, but it happens. This is why we have all these rules. But the guarantor of this, these rights, are the government. Okay, so we come back to who is the guarantor of the covenant? Jesus was. This is going to come in and be super important as we move forward. Because over and over again, I don't care what church you go to, over and over again, you get told as a Christian, to be a good Christian, you have to do this. The answer is no, you don't. You don't have to do anything. Jesus did it. Anytime you're told to do something, that's called self-righteousness. Yeah. It's one of those sticky, hold up, we're not supposed to do self-righteousness. I know, right? So how come we keep getting told to be better people? What is this fascination we have in church with self-modification for Jesus? We get told, yes, I know, there's a verse, love him with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. That does not mean that you get to dictate how I talk. That does not mean that how I talk is going to lead me astray and I'm going to hell if I say a swear word. God's not an asshole. In fact, this is crazy. This is totally crazy. This is scandalous. My behavior matters not one lick. Absolutely does not matter. I believe that Jesus died on the cross. I entered into the covenant and Jesus is the one who signed. So if anything goes wrong, it's Jesus' fault. Regardless of my behavior, this is a scandal. And this is why we have to have Bible studies, because nobody seems to get this. So we need to talk about this, because this is going to solve a lot of problems. Understanding these three covenants, how people in the Bible used to fall under them, how we fall under them today, is going to tell you what you're supposed to do, how we're supposed to interact with God, who God is, what's he like, and what am I supposed to do about it, or do I have to do anything? It's going to answer the question of how do you treat gay people? It's going to answer the question of how do we treat each other? It's going to answer the question of who am I? Yeah, your identity is in the Bible. What you're supposed to do with your life, in the Bible. But you got to understand these covenants. Because otherwise, we don't know that we're walking around with $1 million in the bank and that our father is the richest person around and that we have access to the coolest things. And yes, totally the coolest. Okay, so we're going to put our brains in gear. We're going to ask Jesus to be with us. We're going to, by praying, we're going to use Google because it's easier, and we're going to understand the covenants. And these are the ways that we're going to do Bible studies. I can't wait to get started. Really, this is still just like another introduction, but we're getting there. because I didn't want the podcast to be like super long, because sometimes you're like, all right, get to the point already. What are we doing here? But let me give you just a little teaser. So for a long time, I didn't know what to do with the gays. It sounds funny to say it that way too. The gays. All right. Homosexuality is a huge issue. But let's talk about sin for just a minute. In the New Testament, is there a place where Jesus turns to his disciples and says, we need to talk about your sin. You have not fully given your life over to me. Oh, guess what? Never happened. Never does. Or how about, I want you to look into your hearts and dig out the root of your own evil. Yeah, it doesn't happen. Ever. Because Jesus does not have a sin focus at all. So let's define sin. Or maybe we'll have to do a whole study on this, but here's the quick part. There's a couple definitions of sin. One of them is, by one man's sin, the whole world fell. So Adam, and he ate from the apple. That was sin, and we're done. I feel like that's a little too simplistic, though. I like the definition that sin is separation from God. The actual Hebrew words there, when you break it down, sin means to miss the mark. Which you can see, separation from God would be missing the mark if God was the mark. Okay, so sin is when you don't get it all the way perfect. Huh. That defines things a little bit differently. That means that it, okay, so I made dinner the other night and chicken, and it wasn't done all the way through, which means I'm a sinner. Oh, crap, we're all going to hell. No, wait, we're not. That's what we're talking about. But here's the thing. It means that we literally can't do anything right. I don't know if I even put my socks on the right way. My husband will put one sock on, and then he'll put his shoe on, and then he'll lace his shoe all the way up, and one leg will be fully dressed, and then he'll start on the next one. But I like to go back and forth, so I will put my socks on, and then I will put my shoes on, and then I will tie my shoes. And which one of us is right? Who cares? I mean, like, really, this is what's happening in a lot of churches today. You're really having discussions on how to put your socks on right. You're not really doing anything of importance, because we don't need to identify sin any more than sin is missing the mark. Check. We've all done it. All right, let's move on. If sin is missing the mark, then what are we supposed to be doing? Well, I can't think of a single verse, and yes, I did Google it. I can't think of a single verse where God tells me I need to focus on my sins. He does tell me I need to stop judging one another. A couple of times. He tells me I shouldn't judge people by how they look, or how much money they have, or don't have, or how they behave. Oh, there's a lot of these. Because, well, we do it. And the reason we do it is we want to know where we stand. Because ultimately, it's a question of identity. It's not really that I'm pointing out the sins of others. I want to know, if God lined us up, top to bottom, tallest to shortest, where would I be? Because ultimately here, I want to know who I am. And it's not going to find me good enough. So when I'm looking at another person and I'm making all these little decisions and putting them in boxes, I'm really trying to figure out my own identity. So it's not a question of sin, it's a question of identity. In order to know ourselves, though, we can't miss the mark. We have to be with God. This is what Jesus did. So Jesus traded in his righteousness so that we no longer miss the mark, but we are fully righteous and we are allowed in God's presence. And once we're allowed in his presence, we're allowed to figure out who we are and who he is. It doesn't really matter to me which order you do this in either, because it's super awesome to learn who he is. And yeah, it's super awesome to learn who I am because of that. Okay, so sin means missing the mark and being out of relationship with God. But now that I am in relationship with God and I don't have to do anything because I was just given Jesus's righteousness. What am I supposed to do? It says love one another. So if I'm not supposed to be judging people and pointing out sins, and I'm just supposed to be loving them, that changes the conversation, doesn't it? Anyway, I got a whole bunch of verses. We're going to dive in deep later. This probably won't be the first one, but that's something I want you to start thinking about now. Let's start laying this foundation of, I get to know who I am because who I am in Christ changes everything. It's freaking amazing. All right, we've talked long enough. This was totally fun. I hope you like this, and I can't wait to talk to you again later. Adios.